Engage for Success Radio, raising the profile of employee engagement and shining a light on good practice for people who believe there's a better way to work.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to show number 125 from Engage for Success. I'm Jo Moffat. I'm host for this afternoon's show. And for those of you who aren't familiar with the show or haven't heard me before, just by way of an introduction, I'm MD and founder of Woodread. And we're a specialist ad agency that works with clients to help them use their brand to engage their people on the inside and create healthy and successful and productive cultures in the same way that marketing teams use the brand to engage with consumers and customers on the outside. So that's basically what we do. I'm very, very pleased to have two guests with us this afternoon. I'm pleased to welcome Craig Rollison and Annabelle Fears from National Grid. Welcome to the show, guys.
Hello.
Hello.
Hey, everybody.
Good. Thank you for joining us. Now, Craig is UK Business Analysis and Solution Architecture Manager at National Grid, and Annabelle is Resourcing Lead at National Grid. And they're joining me this afternoon to talk about what they've been doing at National Grid and how they have gone about delivering what certainly I understand from the conversations I've had prior to this afternoon's show, some pretty staggering and almost world-class engagement scores amongst their team. So I think they're going to have some really useful insights to share as to how they've gone about that and what they've been up to. But before we get into that, Craig, first of all, can you just tell us a little bit about your background? You're with the National Grid now, but what's your background been in recent years?
Yeah, so I've been a National Grid for 14 years.
Mm-hmm.
I've always worked in the IT function, and in fact, I've mm-hmm. been in IT for all of my career.
Mm-hmm.
Before National Grid, I actually started with Rover Group, which
all right.
Is no longer around. I then moved into consultancy work and then finally became a permanent employee at National Grid. For the past 7 years, I've been managing teams.
Righto, righto. And Annabelle, what about you?
Yeah, hi. I've been in National Grid slightly longer than Craig, only about 15 years.
Mm-hmm.
Most of that time, I've worked in the IT department that entire time in various commercial roles and financial roles. And before mm-hmm. I came to this team, I was in a telecoms space, so something completely different from business analysis.
Right.
In telecoms.
Right.
And before
so
that,
people tend to. Sorry, go on. Before that.
Before I came to National Grid, I can't remember what I did now.
It was a long time ago. Do people tend to stay a long time at National Grid, or are you the two shining lights?
Oh, I think we're probably some of the younger people. No, they do tend to stay. It's a very good company to work for.
Righto. Okay, well, that leads us quite nicely into perhaps just, Craig, I wonder if you could just explain a little bit about who National Grid are, what they are for those who perhaps are not so familiar with our infrastructure in the UK.
Yeah. So National Grid, we're a UK-US utility. So we
mm-hmm.
work in both of those regions. In the
mm-hmm.
UK, we're a 50-20 company, so we're one of the largest companies in the UK.
Mm-hmm.
On the electricity side, we own and operate the high voltage electricity networks around England and Wales.
Mm-hmm.
And what that means is that we are balancing supply and demand of electricity minute by minute.
Right.
And on the gas side, we also operate the high-pressure national transmission system. So we distribute
mm-hmm.
gas around the UK through that system. And also
mm-hmm.
we own four of the local gas distribution companies as well.
Right.
So we're quite... Right. Important to keep the gas flowing and the lights on as a business.
Mm-hmm,
so that
mm-hmm.
at home from work and at work we are, we know we've got reliable gas and electricity.
Righto. Okay. Well, that's interesting because I hadn't appreciated that you were involved in gas. I think we kind of think of you as the the Leckie supplier, but obviously considerably more than that these days. So that's interesting. And what's your role there, Craig?
So I'm the business analysis and architecture practice manager. So what that means in reality is we've got a team of around 70 people, both permanent and contractors, and we operate a practice model, which means that we look after the recruitment and ongoing performance management of individuals in that practice, and we assign them out to work, to project work. So I tend to look after the overall vision and direction of the practice, the performance management of the team, whereas Annabelle tends to look after both the recruitment and the ongoing work assignments of those individuals.
Oh, I see. I see. Okay, so Annabelle isn't just recruiting, attracting talent to the team. She's also determining where within those teams people are allocated and what their particular projects will be at any given time.
Yes, absolutely, yes. And because it's a practice, people can be moved around into all sorts of different business areas and different projects depending on what their current skill sets are and what where they actually want to develop into as well.
Righto.
So you don't
Righto.
End up with people being siloed in one particular specialism. They can if they want, if that's what they wish to develop, but they get the opportunity to move as well.
Right.
So, yeah,
Okay. Craig, particularly, so you've got 70 people working in a practice model. What kind of challenges does that present to you then, from a management and from an engagement perspective?
Well, there's a couple of things. So we are around 70 at the moment, but we are expanding the team to build an internal capability at National Grid. So obviously we're spending quite a bit of time on recruitment. So making sure that both the recruitment process works well, as well as the ongoing support and engagement of the team. So, you know, keeping the day job going while we're bringing new people in. We've got communication with such a large group of individuals, keeping them aware and up to date. You know, National Grid, like most businesses today, has all kinds of external and internal challenges and competition. So keeping those people informed so that they, you know, aware of what's happening internally and externally.
Can I ask you, Craig? Are they all based in one place?
No, they're well. We have three main locations. So in the Midlands, we've got Warwick, which is our main office. We've also got Solihull, where we've got some projects there, and also we have an office in Wokingham as well. So we are dispersed. There are a few roles that go further afield, but the bulk of the people are in those three areas.
Right, right. And are they all headcount people, or do they vary?
So we have about 40 contractors and 30 permanents, but we are our recruitment at the moment will increase the number of internals over the next 6 months.
Right, right. Okay. Okay, so you have a workforce then that is in multi locations as well. So I guess that presents challenges in terms of that communication point that you were talking about, and I'm sure. So okay, so what prompted these teams to start? When did you start building these teams up, and what prompted that to happen?
Well, we started about, I got my role about 3 years ago and was given the remit to build an internal practice. And the background for that was we had relied quite a lot on third parties to do a lot of the analysis and architecture work. And they continue to play that role. But I think, you know, the idea was that we actually as an organisation need to retain a lot of knowledge so that we make the right choices when it comes to IT. We also needed to build, bring people into the organisation that could then go on to the senior management roles. I think a lot of organisations have lost that bottom layer. So it becomes hard to bring people into senior roles without looking externally. So we wanted to create that talent pipeline as well.
So there was a degree of succession planning that needed to happen, and there were gaps that you needed to, as you say, you needed to fill that pipeline for the leadership of the future.
Yeah, I think those two, but the ability to have internal people that are acting in National Grid's interests and take the knowledge onto the next project. It's with contractors and third parties, they do tend to be shorter term. So a National Grid, what it does is important and is going to be around for a long time. So it was important to build that capability.
So Annabel, perhaps we can turn to you. So 3 years ago, you started to build this internal practice. So obviously part of your remit is actually recruiting and building those teams. So how did you go about that?
Yes, absolutely. Yes. So we started the recruitment a little bit before I came into the team, actually. It's my two-year anniversary, a couple of weeks' time.
Right.
So Craig started. So first of all, we started with getting some more experience people in, especially in the business analysis team, where we were down to quite a few numbers. So first of all, we got the experienced people in from internal and external, and then we started recruiting more and more people, basically to try and build the practice up so we could cover all pieces of work. Now we're in the stage where we're recruiting people who've been promoted recently, so we've got up to a sort of a good critical mass, and now we're replacing those people, and also looking at bringing in junior resources as well now. So this is where the succession planning comes in. We're looking for the resources of the future. It offers line management opportunities for our existing staff as well. We're next year got an apprenticeship scheme for the first time. It's the first a solution architecture apprenticeship scheme that's just been advertised in universities. So we're into the stage now of building the team for the future and keeping it there and developing new talent.
And is it all about skills? I mean, how do you go about making sure that you're attracting the right kind of people that fit with the team and the ethos that you've already developed?
Yeah, it's a mix of things, actually. In the business analysis side, it's a lot of it is about aptitude, really. We can teach people how to be business analysts. But it's being able to understand, especially some of our more complicated systems on the electricity side, and the gas side is a little less complicated, I would say. But it is about aptitude. On the solution architecture side, we're really looking for people who understand very technical things, and that's a long-term career solution architecture, so it's going to be 10 to 15 years of development almost.
And if I can add to that, Joe, one of the things that we always look for in the recruitment process is soft skills.
Mm-hmm.
So and because we're not in a panic buy situation, we already have people doing a lot of these roles, so we can take our time and make sure we do get the right people. So we do look at people that have got that technical aptitude, as Annabel said, but also can work with stakeholders. You know, we're a big organisation, and the ability to deal with lots of different parties, those soft skills are really, really important. So we spent quite a lot of time making sure that, through the interview, that we've got people that are more rounded and not just good technically.
And what kind of how do they work? Are people able to work flexibly, or are they working, or are they all sort of working the same kind of consistent hours?
No, not at all. National Grid's very big on flexible working arrangements. Over 80% of the team are on some sort of a flexible pattern.
Right.
That's one of our big attractions, actually, is that we're incredibly flexible. You can work from home. A lot of people now are starting work much earlier in the day, perhaps before 8 o'clock, and then they're finishing at 4, and then we have others that come in later and finish later. So it's not in today's world you can work anywhere almost, and National Grid fully supports that.
Craig.
Yeah, I was just going to say, Joe, I think that the project environment does have certain demands. So I think it is a two-way street. It's not a completely open book Obviously, you know, the thing is we try to treat people as professionals, so that there obviously are deliverables and important things that have to be done. So, but we encourage people to work, you know, try and get that balance right and to meet both their own sort of work life arrangements as well as the project needs.
Yeah, it's interesting actually, because one of the reasons I ask is I don't know whether you heard last week's show, but we had Jane Guinevere on the show last week talking about flexible working and citing some really interesting examples of organisations who have really embraced it and have found that it not only is good for the employees in terms of engagement, but at the end of the day is very, very much a win-win for the organisations involved as well. So there's a real business rationale for it too. But I guess from your perspective, Annabelle, given that you're not just recruiting, but you're also applying and allocating resource, that can, I guess, present some challenges in terms of making sure you've got the right resource to deliver the right projects at the right time.
Yes, it can, especially when you've got part-timers and, of course, people needing to leave for the school run and things like that. But actually, so many people in projects are also working flexibly, so everybody's got to work it out between themselves. Some people, I'm like myself, I go home, do the school run, and then I log back on and do some more hours, and I get home. That way it suits, you know, my work-life balance, just get some extra work done in the evening as well.
Yes. So we're keeping you back tonight, are we?
Oh, it's all right, school holidays.
Of course it is. That's true. No, they've gone back in Scotland, haven't they? Okay. So you've got your teams, your multi-site, flexible working patterns, an interesting organisation that does an important job. How do you set about creating engagement in those teams? What kinds of things have you done? Because I think that's sort of the nub of this, isn't it? That you think you've done lots of very interesting things and created some really quite staggering results. So tell us a little bit more, if you would, Craig, about the kind of things that you've done to try and engage those practice teams.
Okay. Well, some theory actually that underpins some of this. If I can bear with me on this. So there's some research that Gallup did a few years back about what makes highly engaged organisations, and I think it was documented in the book First Break All the Rules. And there were three things in that really stood out. One was, and asked the question, what is it that people really care about when they go to work, and what do they want from work? And there were three things that really stood out. One was, when I go to work, does somebody care about me? So am I making up the numbers, or actually is somebody interested in and engaged in what I'm doing in my work? The second thing is somebody caring about my development? So actually, am I seeing how I'm moving on? Am I being encouraged to move on and develop as a person? And then the third thing is this point about every day when I go to work, I do what I do best. So that is all about putting people onto work that they're going to really develop and enjoy. So having some say in what the work is. So those three points, if you like, underpin actually a lot of the ways that we work. So, for instance, we have at least five or six different forms of engagement for people. So just to run through them, we have the off-site, where we take the practice to an off-site location, and we go through various topics, have guest speakers, do some group coaching and stuff like that. So actually we have like a one-day timeout for the people that can make it. We don't get everybody up there all the time because of project pressures, but we have a reasonable turnout, enough to have a good discussion and to have some downtime and reflect and talk about development type activities. We have
how often you said you do that?
It's most months actually. We're not, for one of the teams we're only doing one this month because of the holidays and numbers. But generally we try to get to one a month. So that obviously sends a message to people that actually we do want to take time out, reflect, and make sure that people are developing and learning about the business, not all about the day-to-day project work.
Right.
We also have a monthly team talk, which is led by the team members themselves in a rotating fashion. So they hand on the baton for leading that to others in the team. And that's really around company communications. That only lasts about an hour. We also have a weekly team call. So this is just a short half an hour for the whole practice. There's sort of two teams here. So we have 30 minutes for each team on separate days. So we don't have 70 people on the call, but we have sort of 30 on call every week, which is just a check-in with what's happening, so any messages that need to be cascaded. And it is a teleconference, so it's a two-way discussion medium. So we have that. We also encourage people to get out and about, so we take the opportunity to go to conferences. We try to get people to their professional conference. So next month there's a business analysis conference where quite a few of the team are going to that. We also have community of practice events where we will spend one day deep diving on a particular topic, learning about that and getting external speakers in. And then there's the more personal side, which is the one-to-one. So as practice manager, I have lots of one-to-ones with people looking at their own individual development plans and progress and that type of thing. So when you add those things up, if you like, the aim is that people feel that they've got an environment, going back to those three things, that cares about them, where they can develop. And through the work that Annabelle does in the project work, that we're giving people work that really does speak to their skills and abilities and their development needs.
Right, yes. So they're getting the opportunity to do what they do best, but they're also getting the opportunity to work in an environment where they have an opportunity to develop as well. And the various communication things that you're doing encourages them, or encourages a sense that actually they're part of a team that care, and working with somebody that managers that care about them.
So people feel that they're part of something and they're developing and learning, and you know, we take time to do these things in a professional way, so that they're a central part of the role rather than an add-on.
Okay. And I've alluded to this earlier, but what has been the results of this? I mean, you've been doing this now for 3 years. You've built the team up. I think you touched on a little bit earlier, Annabelle, that you're now recruiting for some replacement. But what kind of results has this delivered for you?
If we just look at the engagement outcomes, we National Grid do an annual survey through Towers Watson, and we look at living the values, performance index, and the engagement index. And the engagement index asks some questions such as, are you personally motivated? Would you recommend a friend? Is this a good environment? That sort of thing. So we've now, in January, which was our last survey, we achieved 90 out of 100, which I think, according to Towers Watson, we're sort of 3 points off.
Engage for Success Radio, raising the profile of employee engagement and shining a light on good practice for people who believe there's a better way to work.